though they seldom do so unless they feel it serves those who dwell beyond the veil, he said, deactivating his lightsaber. Ben followed suit. Luke scanned the area with more than his physical senses before jerking his head in the direction of the ship and moving back up the ramp. Ben followed, casting a last glance over his shoulder. Jedi can get past all kinds of locking mechanisms. It wouldn't surprise me to learn that the Yang-Ti can, too. Ben nodded as he closed the door and activated the lock.
Yeah, or maybe it just hopped right on in like the Sanhedrin ships do.
Calf?
Luke asked. Ben nodded. Luke got some brewing.
We know that Tadar Rose said the tensions between the two factions were increasing. I think we can safely say that our mysterious midnight caller was from a side that's hostile to our presence here.
Ben yawned and scratched his head as the calf finished.
It's almost dawn. I'm going to just go ahead and stay up. Practice...
He paused in mid-sentence. Practice flow walking, of course. Luke turned and busied himself with pouring the calf.
There's no point in heading back to bed, he agreed, smoothing over the uncomfortable pause. I'll be in my room meditating.
Okay. Tadar Rose should be here in an hour or so anyway. Be interesting to see what he has to say about all this.
Ben poured himself a cup of calf and turned away without another word. Pained but resigned, Luke let him go. Tadar Rose was horrified to hear of the attack.
A Vorcha stun stick, he explained. That was the weapon the intruder was attempting to use. It is very powerful, and a mere touch of it would have rendered you unconscious for some time.
I don't understand, said Ben. Why break in and attack us just to knock us out?
Tadar Rose's agitation in the Force was painful.
I do not know. Perhaps to simply frighten you. Perhaps to incapacitate you for transportation elsewhere.
Or to kill us when we couldn't fight back, said Ben.
Luke didn't contradict him. The Yang-Ti had been known to attack with lethal intent before.
I deeply regret that this happened. To so ignore the fact that we have offered you hospitality, that you are attempting to help us, it is proof of how dangerous this rift is to our people, our culture.
And any guests, Ben grumbled.
I had hoped for more time, but...
Tadar Rose's tongues flickered for a moment. Luke guessed it was the equivalent of a resigned sigh.
Ben Skywalker's training is progressing well, and it is becoming tragically clear to me that we no longer have the luxury of time. Luke Skywalker, Ben Skywalker, the moment has come for you to go on your pilgrimage and receive the embrace.
The two Skywalkers exchanged glances.
Very well, if you think we are ready.
I think we cannot wait until you are. Besides... Only those who dwell beyond the veil know who is ready and who is not. I am sure that they will guide you.
Very well, Luke said. Is the embrace far?
Many kilometers.
We'll prep the shadow for...
You must travel on foot. To approach the embrace in a vehicle is to give great offense.
Luke nodded.
All right. I could use a little physical exercise.
2 days later, he was regretting the quip. The thinner atmosphere was starting to take its toll. They had packed water, but it was becoming obvious that they should have packed more. Even though they were Jedi, they could not move as fast as they had expected. The Force could only augment so much for so long. Tadar Rose accompanied them, but as soon as he had taken his first formal step on the journey, he refused to speak to them. Luke and Ben, their relationship already strained, found themselves imitating him. For Luke, at least, it made the journey feel that much more difficult. They were heading east from the Yang-Ti city toward a mountain range that ran from north to south. Over the course of 3 days of hard hiking, they reached their destination. A nondescript aperture in what appeared to be a sheer wall face. Ben trudged to a halt. Sweaty, his fair skin sunburned. He stared. He said nothing, perhaps because he was out of breath, but Luke could read his expression.
Is this it?
After keeping utter silence for the entire trek, Tadar Rose finally spoke.
This is the passageway, he said reverently. Inside, you will find all the artifacts we have painstakingly gathered over many thousands of years. Tread carefully, for this is sacred ground to us. Go to the relics. Be with them. Please, find answers for us that we cannot, so that we might heal this terrible rift that wounds us as a people so very deeply.
Luke was moved by the request. He placed his hand on Tadar Ro's shoulder and respectfully moved his face toward the Angtis, knowing that Tadar Ro would read his intention in the Force. Gently, like a blessing, Tadar Ro's long tongues danced over Luke's face. After a moment of looking uncomfortable, Ben imitated his father.
I hope with all my heart that we are able to do as you request, Luke said.
May those who dwell beyond the veil grant you insight, and may the Force be with you.
Luke turned to Ben, caught his eye, and nodded. Then he turned to face the aperture, and, with Ben right behind him, stepped through. A small path wound downward. It had been worn by many feet over thousands of years, so they were able to move forward with relative ease. It grew darker as they left the sunlight of the outside behind, until at last they were almost in complete darkness.
Lightsabers or glow rods?
Ben asked as they continued to descend, feeling their way with hands, feet, and the Force. They had discussed bringing their lightsabers with Tadar Ro, who had agreed. If a wall caved in or some other disaster occurred, they would need to be able to cut their way out. Also, as Ben had just illustrated, the illumination would be useful if the glow rods failed for any reason. Luke paused, frowning in the dark.
Neither, I think, he said slowly.
Huh?
Come on.
They moved forward, their eyes blind, for another few steps. Then, sure enough, the darkness began to lighten. It was only a faint glow at first, so faint as to appear almost a trick of eyes that desperately wanted to see. Then the radiance increased, soft and soothing, but illuminating. There was a luminescence in the Force as well, a comforting, reassuring warmth that bathed Luke's spirit as the light began to bathe his face and hands. He felt refreshed, even though he was physically weary from the pilgrimage, and excitement and anticipation quickened in him. They turned a corner and beheld beauty. The light came not from artificial lighting brought here by the Angti, nor from the relics that had been carried into the cave for so many millennia. Instead, it emanated from glowing stones of all hues, red, yellow, green, blue, purple, white, and all shades and gradations in between. On the floor, from stalagmites, from the stalactites that hung above them like lightsabers, on each wall, they glowed.
Rainbows, Ben said quietly,
and Luke nodded. This was a place where the Force was extremely strong. It was not purely energy from the light side, but it was most certainly not a hollow of dark side energy such as Luke had encountered on Dagobah during the trial he had so miserably failed. He could not tell for certain, but he wondered, as Ben spoke, if this was the reason the Angti had developed their rainbow theory of the nature of the Force. Standing here, embraced indeed by its power, Luke could understand why they felt so. He took a deep breath, pulled himself back from the awe the place inspired, and said,
"We're here for a purpose. Let's be about it."
Ben literally shook his head to clear it, then nodded. They moved forward, through this antechamber crowded with Force-imbued stones, to a second cavern. It was much larger than the first, a rectangular space about 20 by 30 meters. While this cavern, too, was illuminated by the Force, that was not the primary reason for Ben's quick inhalation. Everywhere the eye looked were relics. They were stacked 3 or 4 deep, in haphazard piles that looked as though they'd been simply tossed down.
If these things are so precious to them, why do the Angti treat them so carelessly?
Ben asked, nudging a round, apparently seamless object gently with a foot.
Because they can't touch them, Luke said.
They can't organize or arrange or catalog them in any way. They just have to bring them in here somehow, wrapped in something perhaps, and set them down.
And we have to sort through all this?
Ben said,
his voice cracking slightly. Luke couldn't blame him. Such a task was not just daunting, but bordering on the impossible.
"We don't have to compile data and analyze each one," Luke said. "But from what Tadar Rose seemed to think, we'll find answers as we handle them. Insight, knowledge that we can pass along to the Yang-Ti about what direction they should go."
Ben looked slightly less pained, but still very dubious.
"How long do you think it'll take?"
"Well," Luke said, "I do have 9 years and a few months left to fill."
"That's not funny."
Chapter 23 Inside the Embrace on the Yang-Ti homeworld.
The process was hardly a swift one, but it went fairly quickly. After a few moments of paralyzing indecision at the vastness of the task, Luke and Ben started the simplest way possible. They picked up the first item they encountered as they entered the cavern, and began there. Everything they touched had the imprint of the Force on it in some way, shape, or form. Some were fairly powerful to handle, others only had a faint residue. Most of what they picked up, examined in the Force, and then discarded was clearly technological, although some items were fossils, or stones, or other organic materials.
"If only we could take all these things to the temple," Luke said wistfully.
It was impossible, of course. The relics belonged to the Yang-Ti, and they would never part with even the least of them.
"So much knowledge here. So much we could learn about other cultures, about the history of the galaxy, perhaps about the Force itself. You and I don't have the skills or the tools to properly examine even the smallest fragment of what we're seeing. All this wisdom, collected here by beings who are forbidden even to handle them, let alone study them. I respect other beings' religions, but I have to confess, this strikes me as a tragic waste."
"I know," Ben said. "I'm really curious about some of these things."
He paused, looking up at his father as a long, twining piece of what seemed to be metallic rope twisted slowly of its own accord in his hand.
"So, what are we looking for?"
"Guidance," Luke said. "A hit. A bit of insight. You'll know it if it happens."
"There are times," Ben said dryly, "when I empathize with those who express frustration with the vagueness of the Force."
After the first few hours, when they had made only a little headway and stopped for a food and water break, Luke found himself agreeing with Ben's comment.
"They're all powerful items,"
Ben was saying as he chewed on a stick of something greenish-brown and intended to be more nutritious than tasty.
"I mean, I get that, but I'm not getting any hits. Nothing that's shouting out, 'Do this, Yang-Ti.'"
"Neither am I," Luke admitted.
"Dad, do you think we're going to find anything to help Tadar Roe and his people?"
Luke hesitated.
"It's completely possible that there isn't anything in here to find. But there are still an awful lot of artifacts,"
he pointed out.
"It may be that there's one particular thing that will turn out to be useful, and we'll just have to find it."
Ben groaned slightly. The hours seemed to stretch on with no sense of time passing, although their chronos were working just fine. Sometimes Luke would think hours had passed when it had just been 20 minutes. Other times, he was shocked to realize he'd spent 3 hours without realizing it. What had at first been an intriguing, if laborious, undertaking had become almost mind-numbingly rote. Luke forced himself to stay open to the Force and not let his mind drift from the task at hand. He couldn't afford to miss anything, no matter how subtle. But so far, they had found nothing that could give the Yang-Ti any sort of guidance. Luke straightened and stretched, eyeing the next round of artifacts. His eye fell on something shiny, catching the light of the glowing Force stones. It was a small pyramid of gleaming metal. While some of the other artifacts had shown signs of age and wear and tear, some of them seemingly so fragile that Luke and Ben had been reluctant to touch them, this item looked almost newly minted. Luke extended a hand, grasped it, and gasped.
The Outer Rim, present day.
Vistara had always hoped that one day, if her path towards Sith mastery unfolded as she had dreamed, she would be permitted aboard the Omen, the Ship of Destiny, to learn its secrets and that of her own history. She had never in her wildest dreams imagined that another ship might descend from the skies, looking like a red winged eye, to summon and teach her. But the ways of fate are strange indeed, and Vistara seized the challenge eagerly. Shortly after the devastating news that the Sith, far from ruling the galaxy as the tribe had ignorantly assumed, were facing extinction, Vistara had been called to enter ship itself. She was not the first, she knew. Lord Vol, the Grand Lords, and the Masters had all preceded her. But she was the first among the apprentices, and had stood quietly before it. The spherical vessel was bizarre, almost beyond her imagining. Where a moment earlier had been a seamless red, pebbly curved surface, there was now an open hatch. Before her eyes, a line formed beneath the glowing yellow eye-like viewport. A ramp extended in welcome. Vistara did not hesitate. Indeed, she had to stop herself from racing upward. She felt the vessel's pleasure as she first placed her boot upon the ramp. It was almost like a sigh of relief. She forced herself not to grin. Steadily, she walked upward, into the heart of the vessel. She was not certain at all what to expect, and so simply observed. The interior was smaller than the exterior would indicate. It was a single chamber, 4 meters across and 2.5 high. The curving walls inside looked exactly like those outside, and before she could think, Vistara extended a hand and ran her fingers lightly along the pebbly orange surface. She could have sworn she felt the vessel quiver, like a pet ma'ut being caressed. The wall was warm to the touch as well, and seemed to pulse slightly, like a living thing. There were no sets of controls, no chairs, nothing she had been led to find inside of a ship or indeed any mechanical construct. Ship wasn't going to give her any clues, either. What was expected of her, then? Vistara frowned, then knelt down in the center of the empty, warm chamber. She closed her eyes and reached out in the force to the vessel.
"Command me,"
Ship told her. A smile tugged at the scarred corner of her mouth.
"Fly, then."
She didn't really expect it to obey so simple an instruction, and when suddenly the door was sealed over, like a wound closing, and the ship instantly vertically rose, Vistara tasted fear. Only for a moment, though. She did not blindly trust the ship, but she knew what he was designed for, and she knew she had the will to direct him if she didn't panic. She moved forward on the strange surface to where she could see out the viewport to the temple as it receded, the faces of the Sith watching in the courtyard rapidly becoming tiny dots. She was as high as she had ever been on Tick, and then suddenly she was higher still, and looking down on her home planet with eyes wide in astonishment. It was beautiful, green and brown and blue, with wisps of white clouds here and there, and Vistara suddenly wasn't sure she wanted to leave it.
"You wish to be a Sith Master, do you not?"
"You know I do."
"Then leave this world behind, so that you may conquer others."
Slowly, her palms moist, Vistara had nodded.
"We will need more than you, Ship, if we are to conquer worlds in the name of the Sith."
"I will teach you. I will teach all of you."
And so he had. Every apprentice, every Sith knight, every master and lord learned how to navigate the vessel. He knew more about the Omen than they did, and they eagerly drank in the knowledge it shared. And then he took them to the stars. They began with the conquest of a single vessel, alone and unprotected, no match for Ship. They harried it, dancing and fighting with weapons that Ship manifested into physical form with a thought, forcing the vessel to crash land on an uninhabited world. What crew did not die in the accident met death by Sith lightsabers, Shikar, or glass parang, a bladed weapon originally used for clearing undergrowth that had new value as a weapon that could be thrown and then returned to the thrower. The Sith aboard ship scavenged this, their first kill, and with the vessel's parts were able to make strides toward reconstructing Omen. And they returned to space, isolated and distant from the rest of the galaxy they might have been until now, but no longer. Ship knew where to take them, how to get there, and they would hunt and take their prizes and return with no one left to reveal the location of their hidden world. So they did, again and again, until Omen was completed and spaceworthy. 5,000 years old it might be, but it was Sith, and with repairs, it again dominated the skies. 2 ships now, one a Sith training vessel, the other a Sith battlecruiser. More vessels fell beneath the determined Sith attacks. More vessels that would be pressed into service to the dark side of the Force. Vistara was permitted to be part of the crew of one of the very first craft so commandeered. It had been given to Lady Rhea to command, and renamed Eternal Crusader. Vistara learned, as all of them had, by a few practice drills, and by jumping with both feet into full-on space battles. These new spacefaring tribe members had even adopted new garb for the purpose. Loose flowing robes were a hindrance in scrambling aboard downed vessels and fighting in tight quarters. Instead, Vistara and the other crew members of the various vessels in the new Sith Armada wore tight-fitting pants, shirts that permitted air to circulate and cool overheated bodies, comfortable boots for running and climbing, and weapons that were small, deadly, and clipped neatly to a belt, such as vibroblades, shotos, shikars, and parangs, as well as the traditional lightsaber. Vistara's light brown hair, which she still kept long, was almost always tightly braided now. She could not afford any distractions. 2 years had passed so, and they had been the fastest of Vistara's young life. 16 now, she had transformed from a girl who yearned to become a Sith master to a highly respected apprentice. From an innocent who had never taken a life or even dealt a severe injury to an accomplished killer who had slain dozens by all methods imaginable. She had once dreamed of being allowed even the most fleeting of glimpses inside Omen. Now, she served on a vessel even larger and more powerful than that ancient respected warship. They were returning home after a particularly satisfying attack, 6 Sith ships against 2 bulk freighters, which now were being towed back to Kesh to be repaired, refurbished, renamed, and integrated into the increasingly powerful Sith Armada. They had nearly 12 vessels now. Vistara was happy in her current assignment, though she would have preferred to stay with ship. He had accompanied them on this battle, and she could feel his contentment in the Force at their progress. And then she felt something else. She couldn't figure out what it was. A jolt, an unsettling in the Force, like a stone being thrown into a pond. It was nothing negative, but very powerful. Lady Rhea gasped, her fingers digging into the arm of her command chair. Her face had gone white, and her eyes were enormous and unseeing. Vistara glanced at her in concern, then left her station to go to her master and kneel beside her.
Lady Rhea, what is it?
For another moment, Lady Rhea simply stared, wide-eyed, at nothing. Then she blinked, and seemed to come to her senses.
I felt someone very powerful in the Force, she said,
her voice slightly shaky and laced with an uncertainty that Vistara had never before heard from her. It made her stomach clench.
Strong in the power of the light side. A Jedi, a great master.
And Vistara felt a surge from ship, and a name was placed in her head.
Skywalker.
Dad?
Ben's voice seemed to come to Luke from far away, floating to reach him. It was only his son's touch on his arm that finally brought Luke out of his Force-induced reverie.
What just happened? You all right?
Luke shook his head, staring at the item in his hand, and then gently placed it back down on the pile. Once he had ceased to be in physical contact with it, the strange tingling in the Force ceased.
Yes, I'm all right.
What was that?
Ben looked warily at the object, clearly deeply reluctant to touch it himself. "It's called the Codex," Luke said, knowing this was true, but not remembering getting the knowledge. "It seemed to enhance my force powers, augment them, make them much stronger." Ben lifted an eyebrow and looked with new respect and curiosity at the item.
"That's kinda astral. What is it?"
"I don't know. It's old. It's powerful. And..." Luke hesitated. "It felt..." Ben frowned.
"Dark? Is it dark side technology?"
"No, no." Luke shook his head. "But it... while it enhanced my force abilities, it also..." He groped for words, unused to being unable to articulate what he needed to convey. "I felt vulnerable, as if my ability to resist the temptations of the dark side was being tested. But it's not dark side technology in and of itself. It's just... there's a price for that kind of power." Ben nodded slowly. "And there's something else. I sensed a disturbance in the force."
"That's hardly ever a good thing," Ben said.
"Agreed. But it wasn't violent or tragic. Just, there was a kind of wrongness out there. Something's amiss, out of harmony."
"Could you tell where, or who it affects?"
Luke turned to Ben and looked at him searchingly. "It's coming from the Maw."
Chapter 24. The Ang-Ti Homeworld.
Tadar Ro was waiting for Luke and Ben when they finally emerged, blinking slightly at the change from the comforting dimness of the Four Stones to the harsh sunlight of the Ang-Ti homeworld. Luke was willing to bet that Tadar Ro had not moved at all during the entire time he and Ben had been inside testing the artifacts. The Ang-Ti teacher had curled up like a boulder, and now, as they emerged, he slowly uncurled and stood to face them. His tongues flickered, and his yearning flooded the force.
"Do you have an answer for us from those who dwell beyond the veil?"
Luke and Ben exchanged glances. Luke nodded.
"I do, but I feel strongly that what I have to say should be told to all the Ang-Ti together."
Tadar Ro was disappointed, but he also understood. He nodded, the gesture seeming to come to him more naturally now.
"Very well. But let us make all haste now to return to them. I am sure that they are as anxious as I to discover what those who dwell beyond the veil wish for us."
Tadar Ro was indeed anxious, if the pace he set was any indication. Luke and Ben found themselves using the force to keep up with him. They could, of course, simply have asked Tadar Ro to slow down, but knowing what he did, Luke understood the Ang-Ti's driving need, and he, too, wanted to share what he had learned as quickly as possible. Force-sensitives all, apparently, the Ang-Ti knew they were returning. By the time Luke, Ben, and Tadar Ro reached the Jade Shadow, dozens of Ang-Ti were waiting for them. Still as stone they were, as ever, sitting on their haunches as if they had been carved so. Luke almost felt buffeted by their emotions in the force. Fear, excitement, hope, anger, resentment, gratitude. A rainbow. Luke glanced over at Ben, who nodded solemnly. Then Luke took a deep breath, calmed himself, and spoke. "When we came here, we had many questions about Jason Solo. Thanks to Tadar Ro, we have learned more about him. We also learned many things we didn't expect to. About Georges Cardass, about the Ang-Ti, and how you use the Force, how you regard it. We are the richer for that knowledge. And in return, you asked something of us, something that no one among you could do. Consult the relics that are compiled in the Embrace and seek guidance from them. We have done so. I give you my solemn word that Ben and I have handled every single artifact in the Embrace, trying to find the answers you, our hosts, asked of us. And here is what we have learned."
Ben shifted beside him uneasily. "Here we go," Luke thought. "While we learned much from the relics, and while we touched the Force through them, it is with deep regret that I must tell you we gleaned no insight from them. No direction, no guidance, nothing that we could bring to you as proof that those who dwell beyond the veil had plans for you at this juncture. I am afraid that the Ang-Ti are on their own. You and you alone must decide your destiny. Whether you continue to believe as you have in the past that the Force guides everything, or what the Prophet told you, that everything is preordained, you must chart your own path.
Grief and anger poured into the Force with such violence that Ben winced, and even Luke had to steel himself against it. Out of the corner of his eye, Luke saw Ben's hand twitch. Ben, sensing the hostility rampaging in the Force, desperately wanted to grab his lightsaber, but did not.
Luke was very proud of him. A Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and protection, never attack.
Then, as quickly as it had come,
the crowd's anger abated.
The onslaught of enraged, disillusioned Ang-Ti did not come.
Luke relaxed slightly as he watched them.
They were talking. Their tongues flickered wildly. But he sensed it was less of an argument than a discussion.
Something had shifted. It was subtle, but present.
Luke could not understand them without the translation device, but he had a good idea as to what they were thinking. He glanced at Tadar Ro, who hesitated, then translated.
Some of them say this is proof that we do not need off-worlder aid to decide our own issues. Others say that those who dwell beyond the veil have turned against us, while still others say they have enough faith in us to choose what is right. And still others say that if it were not for Luke Skywalker and Ben Skywalker, we would still be hostile to one another.
Luke smiled a little. He could live with that. It was time for them to go. The Ang-Ti began to drift away, returning to their ordinary lives and letting the off-worlders be about their business.
Luke turned to Ben. If you have any more questions for Tadar Ro, you'd better ask them now.
Ben shrugged, not looking at his father.
Nah, I'm good.
Luke frowned slightly.
Curious. You haven't attempted the flow walking yet.
I decided not to do it. Come on, let's get packing.
Tadar Ro was confused.
But, Ben Skywalker, we discussed this.
Luke's eyes narrowed.
Tadar Ro, can you give us a minute?
Tadar Ro nodded. Ben and Luke strode up the ramp into the jade shadow and closed it.
Ben, Luke said gently, smiling, I know what you're doing.
Again?
Yep.
Luke's smile widened.
You're not going to flow walk because you want to make a gesture to me. It's been uncomfortable these last several days, and it's all centered on the flow walking. You're denying yourself this to try to smooth things over after this rough patch.
Ben nodded, not looking at him.
I'll be honest. I'd be just as happy if you never learned this skill, never used it, especially not to see Jason, because that's what this is all about. But you know what?
Luke placed his hands on Ben's shoulders and turned his son to face him.
The Ang-Ti aren't babies who need the watchful eyes and control of those who dwell beyond the veil. They can make their own decisions, and the same goes for you.
Ben looked up at him searchingly.
Luke smiled. Go on, if you need to do this.
Ben hesitated for a long moment, then nodded, opened the hatch, and stepped outside. Luke watched him as he went to Tadar Ro, and then was surprised when Ben strode off alone. Tadar Ro turned to look at Luke expectantly. Confused, Luke hastened down the ramp to the Ang-Ti.
I thought you would go with him.
He knows the technique. For what he must do, he does not need me present.
Luke felt a pang as he glanced at Ben, a small figure growing smaller in the distance. His son looked terribly alone to him. But Luke understood.
And there is something else I must share with you, Luke Skywalker.
Ben wondered if he should have had a Sanisteam and something hot to eat before attempting to do what he was about to do, but it was too late now. He trudged slowly but doggedly toward the spot where he and Luke had spent so many days learning from Tadar Ro. It all looked as it had before.
the time-smoothed stones warm from the sun, the taller stones casting cool shadows. But it didn't feel the same to Ben. Here was where Tadar Ro had taught Luke and Ben and Georges Cardass. And here was where Tadar Ro had taught Jason Solo. For a long moment, Ben stood, his heart beating too rapidly in his chest, his arms folded. Part of him wanted to just walk away, but another part of him knew he had to do this, or else he would forever wonder if he could have learned something, anything that might make a difference. He sat down, but not on one of the stones upon which the students sat. He was still several strides away from the teaching site, close enough to observe and hear, far enough away so that hopefully his presence would not be noticed. That was one of the things Tadar Ro had cautioned him about. One who traveled into the past could be seen and heard, even change things. But according to the Ang-Ti, the Force would resume its natural flow. One couldn't change things in any significant way. The Force would bring things back to the way they should be. Except, and Ben's heart spasmed in his chest, the Ang-Ti said this because they believed that the Force guided them in their everyday lives. And now, they had this dreadful schism. What if they were wrong? What if both sides were wrong? What if beings weren't guided, or if things weren't preordained? What if he could really change the future? He began to tremble at the awesome nature of the thought. There was only one thing to do. Flow walk, and see what happened. Since his legs were threatening to buckle underneath him anyway, Ben sat down cross-legged on the rocky ground. He began to calm his breathing, as if he were prepared to simply meditate, but he kept his eyes open. Soft eyes with which to see, Tadar Ro said. Hard eyes will not see what they need to see. Closed eyes will see nothing. Soft eyes. Unfocused, but watching. Ben understood. His heart rate dropped and his body relaxed. With his slightly out-of-focus gaze, he regarded the flat stones upon which he and his father had sat. "I don't understand," came a familiar voice. Ben's head whipped toward the sound, but he kept his gaze soft. Tadar Ro was approaching the teaching area, and with him, striding briskly, wearing the brown and tan robes of a Jedi Knight, was
Jason,
Ben whispered. His cousin looked younger than Ben remembered. That was to be expected, of course. This was the past, after all. But there was more to it than that. Ben hadn't realized, while it was all unfolding, how much the war had aged Jason. His cousin's forehead was smooth, his eyes clear and bright and warm. His movements lacked the gravitas they had assumed later, when Jason wore all black, a shimmer silk cape swirling ominously about him. Before Ben was no Sith, no Colonel. Before him was a Jedi Knight, his cousin, a man curious and determined to learn. Jason sat down in front of Tadar Ro and looked at the Ang-Ti expectantly. "How can you go into the future at all if it hasn't happened yet? Yoda once told my uncle it was always in motion."
"Yoda was correct, and yet one can still travel into it."
Jason shook his dark head. "How can you travel into something that is not there?"
"When you flow walk, things become solid beneath you. Your presence brings them into being. And yet, once you depart, they return to what they were. What you see is a future, but not necessarily the future. It is real, and it is not, and it is."
Jason shook his head, laughing with genuine warmth. "That explains everything," he said wryly.
He was so open, so unguarded. Ben tried to remember seeing Jason that way and found he couldn't. Was it because he was here, learning with someone like Tadar Ro? Or had the final shell of hardness, of implacability, simply not folded around him yet?
"I'm glad you're willing to teach me. I want to learn everything I can. This galaxy..." Jason looked off, his expression detached, but not with the iciness that Ben remembered. "It needs order. Healing. Help. Jedi have abilities that other people don't have. We need to do everything we can to help that process. Help." This man had killed innocence, had tortured a woman to death, all in the name of helping the galaxy. How had he justified it, this man who sat there with concern, obviously filling his whole being?
Jason. Oh, Jason.
Ben couldn't take it anymore. With a roar, he jumped to his feet, and the images disappeared as if they had never been. The stones were empty. Like the paradox of traveling into the future, Ben realized that Jason had been at once firmly set on the path to the dark side, and yet not walking it. He had not become Sith, had not really even considered the option seriously. The man Ben had just seen was a Jedi, and an uncorrupted one. He was no wide-eyed innocent. Too much had been done to Jason Solo for that. But for all the pain he had endured, he was not dark. And yet, the shadow was already upon him, in his questions, in his attitude, not in the seeking of knowledge, nor even in the way he would use that knowledge, but in the drive to seek it. Ben wanted to leap up, grab his cousin by the front of his robes and shake him, screaming, "Don't do this! Please, don't do this!" But he knew that even if he had done so, even if he had been able to tell Jason about all the atrocities he would eventually commit, it wouldn't have made a difference. The brokenness was already in Jason. The progression from Jason Solo to Darth Kydus was inevitable and unstoppable. And that knowing broke Ben Skywalker's heart. He stumbled away several steps before leaning against one of the standing stones. He let it support him, clutching it like a lifeline. Luke had been right. There was no healing here, no closure, no chance of saving Jason. Just a horrible, racking inevitability. A feeling of helplessness, and the sensation of picking at a wound that should have healed long ago. Ben rested his head against the stone and sobbed. Both Tadar Ro and Luke were waiting outside for him when he returned. He knew they knew he'd been crying, and he didn't care, didn't attempt to hide his feelings in the Force. Luke looked at him compassionately as he approached.
"You were right, Dad,"
Ben said without preamble.
"It was a horrible feeling. I don't think I've ever felt as helpless in my life. The only thing I can do now is move forward and try to be more aware next time of the warning signs."
He met his father's gaze evenly.
"I couldn't save Jason. But maybe there are others I can help."
He squared his shoulders and turned to Tadar Ro.
"I thank you for teaching me this technique, and I hope you won't be offended, but I have to tell you, I don't intend to do it again. Ever. I think for me, it's better to just live in the present."
Luke remained silent, but Ben felt his father's pride wash over him, like a warm, comforting wave. He blinked hard, not wanting to cry again.
"There is no offense. The ways of the Yang-Ti are not for all. You wish to learn, we teach those who ask. It was the same with George Cardass. In answer to his questions, we only asked him to learn about us, not become like us."
Briefly, Ben wondered what the ways of the Yang-Ti were, now that they had to decide such things for themselves. But it was not his concern, nor should it be. "While you were gone," Luke said, "Tadar Ro and I had a very interesting conversation. It turns out that you and I were not the only humans to have handled the Codex." Ben felt a jolt, then gently pushed it down. Despite what he had witnessed through flow walking, he knew that sooner or later he'd have to learn to not wince when someone talked about Jason.
"Jason did too?"
Luke nodded. "I told Tadar Ro what we experienced, and apparently Jason felt the same thing happen when he touched the Codex."
"The whole augmenting your powers thing?"
"Well, yes, that. But more importantly, he had the sensation of something wrong in the maw that I did. He told Tadar Ro that when he left, he was going to investigate the maw and find out what it is." About 40 million questions crowded Ben's mind. He opened his mouth to try to articulate at least 63 of them, but Tadar Ro interrupted.
"I told Jason Solo not to go, and I give the same message to Luke Skywalker and Ben Skywalker.
Why not? If there's something wrong there...
Ben began.
There, the Mind Drinkers dwell. It is a dangerous place for those who use the Force.
Ben looked at his father. Luke nodded slightly. We embarked on this journey to find out what happened to Jason Solo to turn him into Darth Kydus, Luke said, and also to see if we can find out anything about the strange mental illness that is crippling the Jedi Order one by one. Tadar Ro, we have to go investigate this. Despite the intensity with which he had warned them, Tadar Ro did not seem surprised at their decision. Perhaps after knowing four humans, he was starting to figure out how stubborn they could be.
So said Jason Solo, and I will give you the same parting gift I gave him. A riddle. The path of enlightenment runs through the chasm of perfect darkness. The way is narrow and treacherous, but if you can follow it, you will find what you seek.
Ben and Luke exchanged glances. No other clues?
As you told my people earlier, you must figure it out for yourselves.
Despite everything, Ben found himself grinning. He had no idea that the Ang-Ti had such a sense of humor.
And for Ben Skywalker, I have another gift, one that is not quite so difficult to understand.
He had been carrying one of the Vorcha stun sticks attached to a belt around his waist. Now he reached to unfasten it, offering it to Ben.
You and your father were attacked with such a weapon. I deeply regret that attack. Now the weapon is yours. I know you will wield it carefully. It can render your enemy unconscious, even through armor.
Lubed,
Ben said, grinning as he accepted the stick. He bowed to Tadar Ro.
Thank you, Tadar Ro. Thank you for everything.
Luke caught Tadar Ro's eye and smiled a little. Then, before Ben knew what was happening, there was a sharp pop of displaced air. The Vorcha stick simply vanished from his hands to reappear in his father's. He gaped for a second, and then realized that while he had been studying so hard to learn flow walking, Luke had readily mastered the other known Ang-Ti force technique. He laughed a little as Luke tossed the stick back to his son. Tadar Ro bowed to both Skywalkers.
Travel safely. May you learn what you must.
May the Force be with you, Luke said.
Amusement bathed them.
It is always with everyone,
Tadar Ro said, nodded to them, and turned to go. Less than an hour later, they were ready to depart. Ben had even had a chance to grab a Sanisteam and a Nerf stick. He slipped into the chair beside his father, moving quietly as Luke was recording a message.
And based on all this, we've decided to head to the Maw, Luke was saying. I'm not sure when we'll be out of the rift and you'll be able to receive this, but I thought you should know as soon as possible. Ben and I will get to work on the riddle, but if any of the Masters figures it out before we do, I promise I won't be insulted. I hope to talk to you soon, and I hope all is well back home. He punched a button and sent the message, then turned to Ben. Ready to talk to these mind drinkers who supposedly dwell in the Maw?
Sure, Ben said, lifting the Vorcha stick. I think we can handle them.
Chapter 25. Kesh.
Lady Rhea had spoken with Lord Vol, and the Eternal Crusader had been summoned back to Kesh. As they entered orbit, Vistara realized that the whole armada had been recalled, currently in orbit around a world that, 2 years earlier, had never even seen an operational spacefaring craft, were more than 24 starships. Vistara, Lady Rhea, and a few other crew took a small transport to Tov. The sharp delight Vistara took in the fact that she was no longer on the outside, wistfully looking in, but almost always brought in on every major decision and planning session, had not faded over the last 2 years. She was aware of the responsibilities of such an honor, and never took it for granted. She recalled the first time she had stood in these council chambers, frightened but resolute. How naive she had been then. She smiled a little and shifted position, then stilled, as Lord Vol began speaking.
A short time ago, many of us felt a very strong rippling in the Force. We sensed a presence that we immediately realized would be a threat to us. Ship was able to identify that presence as the current Grand Master of the Jedi. Luke Skywalker.
A soft murmur went through the room. Lord Vol held up his hand for silence.
The information Ship has given us on this Skywalker is sobering. He is, however, far from his home base. We do not know to what end. Still, I am not about to overlook an opportunity when one drops as perfectly into our hands as ripe fruit. Skywalker is several light years away, but still within our ability to reach. Over the last day, I have been in contact with Lady Rhea.
He nodded to Vistara's master, who stepped forward.
When Ship came to us with news of the near extinction of the Sith, she said, her voice clear and strong, we did not fall victim to despair. We acted. Vessel by vessel, we are assembling a fleet with which we will eventually take back the galaxy from the Jedi, who spread like vermin throughout system after system. Such is our goal. Some will say one man cannot hold a whole galaxy together. True, but one man can lead and inspire. If the head is cut off, the body will follow. Luke Skywalker has done much to fight the Sith, the dark side. He was at one point the last Jedi, and now he has recreated the Order with hundreds of them.
She was so disgusted by this, she was almost spitting the words.
And now, somehow, he has broadcast his presence into the Force, and we can take him down. Lord Vol and I have handpicked a single strike team to bring against this Skywalker. He...
A moment,
said Yuvar Chahl, Ahri's master.
The Grand Master of the Jedi cannot possibly be simply wandering off alone. He must be on a mission of great importance, and it's logical to believe that he has many vessels under his command. A single strike force would do nothing against that.
There was something about his presence. I do not think so. For whatever reason, my instincts are telling me that he is, if not alone, at least unaccompanied by any sort of fleet,
Lady Rhea said. Vistara understood what she meant. There had been a sense of isolation in Skywalker's presence.
Regardless, if such does turn out to be the case, we will be able to make that determination and call for reinforcements. A huge fleet will announce our presence. One or two smaller vessels will be able to glean information much more readily,
Lady Rhea continued. Chahl looked unhappy, but fell silent.
Now,
Lady Rhea continued,
we...
It rocked through them like a wave. Vistara actually stumbled. It was at once almost overpowering and nourishing. Pure dark side energy crackled through the room, piercing their hearts like an embrace that was welcomed but too tight to be truly comfortable. Vistara extended a hand as if she could physically reach out and touch whatever it was that was permeating her entire being. She wanted it, ached for it, felt tears suddenly stinging her eyes. And then, a rush of joy flooded her. Ship. He was all but singing, a devoted pet racing to his beloved master, following that call of the dark side energy.
No! Cried Vistara. Ship!
She blinked, recovering as the strange pull suddenly ended. Lady Rhea was staring at her.
Vistara, what is it doing?
Vistara licked lips suddenly gone dry. She felt intensely, terribly bereft. Abandoned. Left behind. Empty. Her connection with Ship had always been acknowledged as the strongest among any of the Sith. He had contacted her first, and had maintained that level of intimacy, almost through the last 2 years. Now, he had left them. Left her. Without even a twinge of regret or a farewell.
He's... He's gone,
she said in a voice that trembled.
He's following that call.
For a dreadful moment, everyone was still. Horror, anger, and anguish flooded into the force. And then Lord Vol rose. His body was frail, but his power was not. And he gut-punched them with his determination.
We had planned to send a strike force after Luke Skywalker. Now we have a more important mission. Follow ship and recover it.
Him,
Vistara thought.
Ship's mail.
The strike force will prepare to launch after ship as soon as you are prepared under the command of Lady Rhea.
Lady Rhea turned her eyes to Vistara and nodded. Excitement and fear both clutched at Vistara, but she forced them back. If she was to be of any use on this mission, she would need to be calm, be in control of her emotions, not let them dominate her. They would find Ship, and find out what had been so compelling that he had felt it necessary to abandon those he had once come to. Leia and Han sat on Alana's bed, tucking the covers gently in around her. The little girl was proving to have a backbone of Durasteel, given how well she bounced back from things. She seemed to have recovered fully from the incident at the livestock exchange and exhibition, except she seemed unusually thoughtful. Whenever Han or Leia tried to gently coax her into talking, she said she was fine and smiled at them. But tonight, she looked up at them just before they each leaned in turn to kiss her forehead.
I've been thinking, she said.
The pair exchanged glances and sat down on either side of her bed.
About what, honey?
Leia asked.
About what happened at the show.
Leia reached and stroked the girl's soft round cheek.
Go on.
You had to kill some of the animals to save people.
Leia nodded.
That's right.
But they were just animals. They had been bred to be mean.
It wasn't their intention, not like with sentient beings,
Leia said, wondering where this was going.
That much is true. But a threat to a being is the same, whether it's done with intention or not.
But the Nexu, she had cubs.
Ah, now Leia understood.
Yes, she did.
And you killed her. Because she was hurting people. So now the cubs have no mother, no one to look after them.
She lifted her calm gaze to theirs.
I think we should take responsibility.
What?
Han exploded.
One of the cubs. Rad Minker said you could tame them if you found a good trainer for them. We took their mother away. We should take care of at least one of them. It's the right thing to do. It's justice.
Han gave Leia a what-the-stang-do-we-do-now look. Leia suspected she had a similar expression on her own face, but she was also unspeakably proud of their granddaughter. Her instincts, her moral compass, they were dead on. She was an amazing little girl, and would grow up into a remarkable woman.
You're right, honey. It's the right thing to do.
Han's eyebrows shot up.
I thought we were getting her a nice little kibbuk, he said. You know, gentle, small, no mouthfuls of sharp teeth.
We might not be able to keep one for ourselves,
Leia continued, as if she had not heard Han at all.
But we can certainly make sure they all go to good and loving homes.
Or how about a tauntaun?
Han said, desperation creeping into his voice.
3PO can give it a bath every other day.
Can we try to keep one?
Alana asked, slightly wistful, also ignoring Han.
We'll see,
Leia said. Tahiri sat alone in her apartment, mechanically forking what passed for dinner into her mouth, chewing and swallowing. It was technically eating, but she paid no attention to the process. Her mind was elsewhere. She wondered how Jaina Solo was doing. Several days had passed since that reporter, Javis Tyr, had done his exposé on the evils of the Jedi. As part of the team that had been responsible for nabbing Seth Helen, Tahiri was relieved that Dala had agreed not to extradite him or Natua Wan.
but it was clear that the chief of state was smarting and had decided to do everything she could to humiliate the Jedi if she couldn't have her prize. The interview with Jaina was painful to watch. Knowing the other woman as well as she did, Tahiri could feel Jaina straining to utter acerbic responses to the utterly inane questions Tyr was asking. Or, which would probably please the Solo daughter even better, pop the reporter one. She was sorry, too, for Silgall and Tekly, although both came off well. The former's quiet dignity and composure made Javis Tyr look tawdry, and the latter's obvious distress and extreme cuteness were certain to make any viewer root for her. The only reason Tahiri was not on Holocam with them was that she was no longer officially a Jedi, and therefore Jaina Solo had not been ordered to give her name. For that, Tahiri was intensely glad. There were days when her decision to keep apart from the Order completely felt like the right one, and others when it felt utterly and completely wrong. She put down the fork, stared at the half-eaten food, and rested her face in her hands for a long moment. She thought back to the words Sef Helen had hurled at her, thinking she was a doppelganger.
Murderous traitor. Pathetic slave to her emotions. That's what she is.
They'd hurt. They'd hurt more than she would ever have expected. They'd hurt because they were true. She had been all those things, and perhaps still was the latter. She had told Jaina she was trying to figure things out, and she was. Jaina had responded at the time with a hug, and later showed faith in Tahiri by asking her to participate in the Dark Meld conspiracy. Maybe there was a way back from this after all. The door chime sounded. Tahiri sighed, shoved aside the half-full plate of food, and padded to the door on bare feet. Three GA officers stood outside. Two had weapons. The third was dressed in a suit and carried a data pad, atop which was folded a small card.
Tahiri Vela, you are under arrest on the charges of obstruction of justice, complicity in the murder of Admiral Galad Pellion, and treason.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Fate of the Jedi, Omen, by Christy Golden. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Dan Zitt. Star Wars, Fate of the Jedi, Omen is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2009. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.